Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender. So great to have you here today. Well, today we get to talk about relationships, talk specifically about marriage, and another of my favorite subjects, we get to talk about assessment tools that help you understand yourself and others better. I don't know why I love these so much, but it helps me make sense of my world a little bit more and helps me make sense of myself. One of those assessment tools is called Strengths Finder. Maybe you're familiar with it. You may have done Strengths Finder as a way to learn what kind of a worker or employee that you would be, what kind of career might be best for you. Today, we're going to look at it a little bit differently. We're going to look at that StrengthsFinder assessment tool and how it relates to marriage, how to build a stronger relationship by understanding not only your own, but your spouse's gifts and strengths. So, Ryan, did you ever take the StrengthsFinder assessment?
I had the opportunity to do that.
Do you remember one of your strengths?
Yes. I think relatability was one of them.
Relator, yes.
I remember specifically that I was not a woo. I did not have the enthusiasm that was necessary to achieve woo.
Everyone wants woo, don't they? Everyone who doesn't have woo wants woo.
It sounds so melodic.
It does.
And epic.
It's the person who walks into a room that people want to talk to. They're very easy to have a conversation with.
Yeah.
They're fun to be around. I am married to a woo, so it worked. It worked on me. But I have no woo, so I'm not quite sure what he saw in me. Maybe he opposites attract. I don't know. We will talk about that as well. The poor guy married someone with the top three strengths as competition, discipline, and achiever. So, I mean, he was
Whoa.
Dead in the water before he even knew it, wasn't he?
Well, you are an impressive human being, though. That's what we can't lose sight of here in all of this.
Well, I'm excited to ask our guests today about how in the world we got together, and maybe they can give me some tips on how we can stay strong in our marriage as well. Let me tell you a little bit about our guests for today. We have two people joining us today, Jimmy Evans, who's the founder and CEO of Marriage Today, the ministry's national television program, Marriage Today, with Jimmy and Karen, his wife. It broadcasts daily to more than 110 million households in North America and more than 200 countries worldwide. He's also the author of more than 15 books, including a co-author of the one we're going to talk about today, called Strength-Based Marriage, Build a Stronger Relationship by Understanding Each Other's Gifts. Also joining me today is the co-author of that book, Alan Kelsey. Alan is an associate senior pastor at Gateway Church in Dallas-Fort Worth. He's the former CEO and of a franchise business. Alan's a Gallup certified strengths coach, and at Gateway Church, he oversees adult education and leadership development of the staff and congregation. He's originally from South Africa. Alan is married to Stephanie, and they have two daughters. Welcome, Jimmy and Alan.
Great to be with you, Ryan. It's great to see you. Hear from you.
Well, it's great to have you on the show, and I'm sure that most people want you to figure them out when they have you as a guest. I'm going to try not to do that, because we have lots of listeners who want us to help figure them out.
True. It is remarkable. You said it in the introductory monologue, just how fascinated we all are with ourselves. And I think that that's a God-given fascination, actually. I think God likes that we are investigative of the gifts that he's given us. And so I think he provokes that a little bit, because it ends up that we find what he's doing in us, and then we can partner ourselves with what he wants to do in the world that way.
Oh, that is such a great way to look at it. You know, I took my StrengthsFinder assessment when I was in a leadership class in graduate school, and I remember bringing it home and giving it to my husband and saying, well, this cannot be me. And he read, it's a very detailed report, and he read the report and he handed it back to me, and he said, oh, honey, this is exactly you. And it was just an interesting discussion that we then got to have. And I'm hoping that this book and a lot of what, of course, you say that we should be doing to try to get to know our spouses, I'm hoping that really brings spouses together. Are you finding that that's been the case?
Yes, and really that's the reason Jimmy and I wrote it, is because we feel like there's a lot of material that's out there that deals with the old-fashioned approach, which is fixing a brokenness. You know, that's the pathology of psychology. We began many, many years ago with, let's find the pothole in the road, fix it, and then your ability to travel will be much easier. But it was in the mid-50s that Dr. Don Clifton decided to pour all of his attention rather into what was right about people, and dared to believe that if we focused on that, something miraculous might happen. And it turned out to be incredibly true. And so this book is leans on that side of the equation. It can help people who are having struggles, but it's really designed for the larger majority of us who are married and enjoying our marriages. They're not broken, but they're not fantastic. And we just want a kick in the pants to help us get better.
Hmm. Well, Alan, for those who are not familiar with StrengthsFinder or kind of wonder what we're talking about, could you give just a general overview of what this assessment is supposed to show and how we are to use that information?
Absolutely. So we all are fascinated with assessments of any and all kinds, even the silly short kind that you'd find in like a Cosmopolitan magazine that says you're sexy when you wear green for whatever reason. You know, that stuff's cute and it's fun, but the problem with it is it doesn't change how you live tomorrow. This survey does, because it deals with your inner motivations. You mentioned that you have achiever. That means you love to check boxes. You love to accomplish things. The best part of your day and mine, by the way, because it's my number one and it's Jimmy's number one, is when there's a box that you can check, which means that you've actually completed a thing. We tend to make lists. We might even make lists of our lists. And it might not even be unusual if we get something done during the day that wasn't on any list, that we would go back to the list, write it in, just so that we can live the joy of checking the box. So that tells me a lot about my motivation, and that leads me to a better understanding of who I really am. And that's what surveys are about. It's the reflection of who you really are. And honestly, my last point in this regard is this. You can't see yourself completely. You literally cannot. If you stand alone in a room and try to see all of you, you cannot. You have to have something outside of yourself to help you see the full you. Sometimes it's a mirror, sometimes it's a camera, sometimes it's a friend, and sometimes it's an assessment that helps you see yourself.
So now you've kind of taken this assessment and been able to apply it to marriages. And can you talk a little bit about that process, Jimmy? How can we use this StrengthsFinder to apply it to our relationship with our spouse?
Joe, thank you. It's great to be with you guys. Let me first of all say that people with woo and competition frighten me. So I really don't want to get to know you and your husband. Alan is the strengths expert, and I am the marriage expert. And so we came together to write this book. I am absolutely fascinated by this. Now, we took at Marriage Today, my son is the president of Marriage Today. And years ago, he joined with Alan to give our staff the Clifton StrengthsFinder assessment, and it was just phenomenal. I mean, it just nailed everyone. And it helped so much to be able to understand each other. It helped to be able to put the right people in the right place. It really just transformed our work environment. And so Alan and I began to talk about what would happen if couples began to understand their strengths, rather than taking it in the context of work, which is phenomenal. What if couples can understand their strength? Because the number one marriage book today in the world is Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman. And it's just a terrific book because it helps you to understand, you know, there are different love languages, and it might be that the way I perceive love is not the way my spouse does. Okay. Well, in the strengths area, there's just no one like you. Alan says it in the way of, I think that for a person to have my top six strengths, it's like one in 70 billion people, something like that. A person that would have my strengths and my order. So my wife and I took the Clifton StrengthsFinder. Alan gave us, both of us, the assessment. This is an example And I've always known, you know, we had a very bad marriage. We've been married for 43 years. We had a bad marriage for the first several years. I thought my wife was defective. I thought she was beautiful physically, emotionally. I thought she was the weirdest person I ever met. And I just tried to change her. She tried to change me. It was awful. And the Lord healed our marriage. But even after the Lord healed our marriage, you know, there was just always that mystery of what the heck do you think you're doing? You know, just the different way that she did things and I do things. Well, so this is an example of the beauty of the Clifton StrengthFinders and the strength-based marriage. So we took our assessment. My number one strength, there's 34 strengths possible. The ones that matter really are your top five. My number one strength is achiever. That is my wife's number 34. My wife's number one strength is empathy. That's my number 34. And Alan said he didn't know if he'd ever seen two people more opposite than my wife and me.
That's
true. But you know something? We make a great team. We really do. We complement each other's weaknesses together. We are very strong. When you understand that God put you together with someone who is your compatible opposite, you're going to marry your compatible opposite. Two woos typically don't marry each other because the universe couldn't sustain it. Is that, you know, that your people who are highly competitive and highly achievement oriented typically will marry someone more relational. And God just made us to where we gravitate to a person. Compatibility is based on character and values and shared goals. It's not based on sameness. See, some people think that for me to be compatible with someone, we need to be soulmates and want all the same things at the same time. Your worst nightmare is to marry someone just like you. Someone said one time that, that if both of you are the same, one of you is unnecessary. Mm-hmm. So God made us. He says that God looked on creation and everything that he had created, and it was very good, except for one thing, Adam by himself. And he said, it's not good that man is alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him. The word comparable to them means compatible but equal, different, complementary but equal. So we complement each other. And what the StrengthFinders does, which is beautiful, is it helps you to understand from birth. I came out of the womb. My granddaughter, Kate, who is one of my favorite people on earth, is woo, 100% woo. She's never taken the test. I promise you she's woo. Mm-hmm. Since the day she came out of the womb, she's never met a stranger. She, as a four-year-old little girl, she would walk up to a group of adults and say, my name is Kate Evans, who are you? And just stare them down and intimidate them. So I didn't make a choice to be like this. I was wired by God. I was knit in my mother's womb to be like this. So Alan and I have done this a lot in with a lot of couples. It is the most beautiful thing on earth to see two people finally understand we are different by God's design, and now we have a language for our differences. It's changed our marriage. It really has. We had a good marriage before we took StrengthFinders. It took our marriage to another level, and we have a language today we didn't have before.
Well, I'm talking to Jimmy Evans and Alan Kelsey today about their new book called Strengths-Based Marriage, Build a Stronger Relationship by Understanding Each Other's Gifts. We're going to talk more, of course, with Jimmy and Alan when we come back. But if you're listening in and you're familiar with StrengthsFinder and you love marriage as well, well, this might be the book for you. We do have a few copies to give away. We'll do a drawing at the end of the show, but you can give us a call right now and get your name on that list. 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. And we will be right back on Connecting Faith.
Well,
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Just grateful to have you here with us this afternoon, having a great conversation about marriage. And maybe you are finding that you have an obstacle in your marriage, maybe not knowing your spouse, or maybe thinking, like one of my guests said, that their spouse is weird. Well, we're going to try to help dispel that and try to get to know your spouse a little better by covering this book called Strengths-Based Marriage, Build a Stronger Relationship by Understanding Each Other's Gifts. And one of those ways, of course, is to take the StrengthsFinder assessment. And Jimmy, one of the things that you had mentioned is that this assessment kind of helped you to look at your spouse in a different way, and maybe she wasn't so weird. Talk more about that.
Well, Alan and I did a television program together about a month ago, and we had three couples on the set, and they had just taken the Clifton StrengthsFinders, Alan got all of their Alan and I both got their top five strengths. So we're on the set together with these couples, and Alan turns to one of the couples. And he starts with a man, and he says, here are your top five strengths, and kind of explains the man's strengths to him. And the guy's just thinking, he just said, that's phenomenal. That's exactly who I am. I love that. And he's just celebrating and everything. Then Alan turns to his wife and said, well, let me talk about your top five strengths. So he begins to talk about how she's different and how she has these strengths that are, you know, hers, different than his. So as Alan is talking, the husband kind of gets this sick look on his face. And so when he's finished talking to the wife, the husband says, oh, my gosh, I've always thought there was something wrong with her. So, I mean, it was the most priceless moment because – really, it's every couple. Most people think there's something wrong with their spouse. And I've done marriage for 35 years. I've been a marriage expert for 35 years. And so I've done tons of counseling, you know, everything. And most people, in most marriages, there's a dominant spouse. There's a spouse that's stronger than the other. Okay. And even if they act as equals, there's a spouse stronger than the other. And in most marriages, the dominant spouse begins a narrative that, if you would change, our marriage would be better. If you would, you're the problem. If you would change, our marriage would be healed. But in fact, what they're actually trying to do is to change the unchangeable. The surest way to fail is try to change the unchangeable. I'm a pilot. I fly airplanes. If I try to change the law of gravity, I'm going to kill myself. It's an unchangeable. You can respect it or you can die. God made your spouse in their mother's womb different. They're fearfully and wonderfully made. And so when we take the Clifton StrengthsFinder assessment, and it's just unbelievably accurate, is science, 40 years of science applied to this. And one after the other, you see couples, and we say to them, when we tell them their strengths, and they took the assessment, but when we tell them their strengths and talk about them, one of the questions we always ask is, do you agree with this? They'll say, absolutely. They'll just shake their heads and go, this explains, like you said about your husband, Joe, is that, you know, we see ourselves and we see our spouse. But the point being, in many cases, when people take the StrengthsFinders, it's healing, because what it says to them is, what you have believed all these months or years was something wrong with your spouse is actually their strength. And let me give you one example of this very quickly. We had a pastor and his wife that the StrengthsFinder saved their marriage. So this was a couple of years ago before our book came out. And I was telling him about our book, Strengths-Based Marriage. He said, well, that saved our marriage. I said, StrengthsFinders? He said, oh, yeah. He said, my number one gift is positivity, but my wife's number one gift is strategic. He said, so I like being positive. And he said, every time I said something, I would make a comment, and my wife would try to improve it or adjust it somehow. And he said, drove me crazy. I just thought she's a nag. She's negative, and there's something wrong with her. He said, when I saw that her gift was strategic, and I read, see, strategic people always want to improve something. It's not a weakness. It's a strength. And he said, when I saw that my wife's number one strength was strategic, and I read the definition, I stopped being angry at her, and I started accepting her for who God made her to be. That's what strength matters does. Mm.
You know, Jimmy, you're talking about how it's such a great tool to help one spouse understand another. But, Alan, do you also hear from couples that doing an assessment like this is really a great way for an individual to understand themselves, to not think that there was something wrong with them as well?
That's exactly right, Joe. And you know, all psychologists almost universally will never agree on anything except this one idea. And it's that self-awareness is at the bottom of all development, all human development. We get better when we know who we are. And if you want to improve your marriage, you really can't do that until you truly understand who you are, and then you can advance to helping somebody else. And so this brings new wisdom and new insight into who you are as individuals. It brings healing to the internal dialogue that we all have, where we talk to ourselves, about the things we like, about the things we don't like, what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing, what we hold ourselves responsible to and not responsible to. It brings healing to all of that because it explains your inner motivation. For example, you have achiever and discipline. Listen, if you get up early to work out or go do something else like that, you're doing that out of a power that's given to you by God. You almost can't even help yourself. I understand that because I know what that feels like. My wife, on the other hand, does not share any of my strengths. And so when I get up early in the morning to go work out, she will occasionally roll gently over in the bed and mumble something like, "I have no idea how you do that." And go back to sleep again. Well, it could be for me then to say proudly, "Well, I'm just a disciplined person and you're a lazy slob. If you'd get your butt out of bed, we'd be able to get something done." And really, think about the reality. I mean, how many arguments naturally start just that simply? Or I could go, "Wait a second. My wife is riddled with relationally powerful strengths, and her Superman powers work in a different place. Mine happen to land here, hers land there." It changes the landscape of my interaction completely. But it starts with me understanding myself first.
That's such a great point. And when you talk about having conversations that maybe you wish you wouldn't have started or that turn into arguments, it seems like couples do that because we want someone or we think that someone should understand us automatically. Yet that isn't always what happens.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly what happens. And so here's part of the explanation for it. Because we're born with our strengths, we live with them every day and they feel so normal that they're incredibly familiar to us. The trap of familiarity, I'm going to say something that's a little complicated, so just
hey, Alan,
in for a second.
Before you say something that's really complicated, we have to take a quick break. It's going to shut off whether I want it to or not. So how about you hold on that information, and we're going to catch that on the other side of the break. If you're listening today, we are talking to both Jimmy Evans and Alan Kelsey. They're the authors of a new book called Strength-Based Marriage, Build a Stronger Relationship by Understanding Each Other's Gifts. We'll get more great information from them when we come back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender. Pleased to have two guests on today, Jimmy Evans, who's the founder and CEO of Marriage Today, which is a ministry and national television program. And they have an audience worldwide. Jimmy and his wife, Karen, live in Dallas, Texas, and he's been a marriage expert for many, many, many years. Alan Kelsey is an associate senior pastor at Gateway Church in Dallas, Fort Worth. He's a former CEO of a franchise business, and he's also a Gallup Certified Strengths Coach. And that's important because the two of them have co-authored a book called Strengths-Based Marriage, Build a Stronger Relationship by Understanding Each Other's Gifts. And this advice, I guess, is based on the Clifton Strengths Finder, which couples can take and then learn a little bit about each other and then hopefully help to build a stronger marriage. Well, Alan, before the break, you were kind of talking about how sometimes we take these strengths for granted. We think that everyone should be familiar with their strengths and it should be common to everyone, but that's not necessarily true, is it?
It's very true, Joe. You know, we're born with them, and so you live with them your whole life. So they establish a kind of a lens over your vision that colors everything you see. And because it feels so normal and familiar, you begin to feel like, well, gosh, everybody thinks this way. This is what normal looks like. But when you run into other people who don't think the way you do, you realize they're perhaps not so normal, and you wonder if they have any strengths whatsoever. And the trap we fall into is that we think everybody has, that everybody's familiar with their strengths, and our familiarity tricks us into thinking our strengths are common, and they're really not. They're incredibly rare. In fact, there's a 1 in 33 million chance that my strengths, my top five strengths, in the same order, could be found anywhere else in the world. So they're just incredibly rare. And so when you look at your spouse through these lenses, you ought to know that you're looking at a masterpiece. You're looking at a one-of-a-kind expression on the planet today. And once you grab a hold of just that simple idea, it changes the way you look, you know? I look here, and use this as an example. You would stare at the Mona Lisa in a different way than the way you would stare at a McDonald's sign. The difference is the McDonald's sign is common. The Mona Lisa is unbelievably rare, and it's the posture of your heart that gives that away. Well, believe it or not, our spouses can tell when the posture of our heart has changed.
Hmm. We had a listener call in who was interested in getting the book, which we'll get to her. And Tricia was wondering, how is this idea of strengths-based marriage and being different relating to the idea of being one flesh in marriage? Jimmy, maybe you could tackle that.
Absolutely. Then let me first of all say to Joe, when you buy our book, if you have not taken your Clifton Strength Finders, it does require, if neither spouse has taken their Clifton Strength Finders, it's $15 a piece to go on the, I believe it's GallupStrengths.com, to take the Clifton Strength Finders, the assessment. So we want people to know, in addition to the book, you will need to take your assessment, and that's an extra cost. But it also, there are 2 hours of videos by Alan and me included in this book. At the back of the book, you're given a website and a code where you can go on, and we spend 2 hours talking about the strengths and explaining it. But let me say this related to the question of being one flesh. One flesh relates to the intimacy of marriage, sex. The Bible tells us that when we have sex with someone, we become one with that person. In other words, that sex is the only unique feature of marriage. And according to Corinthians tells us that sex is a different sin. Sexual sin is different than any other sin, because when we have sex with someone, we actually become one with that individual. It's a spiritual act. So becoming one relates to when we get married, God joins us spirit to spirit. Jesus said in Matthew 19 that what God has joined together, let not man separate. In Malachi, it says, haven't I made them one, giving them a remnant of the Spirit? So when we get married and we have sex, there is a union, a spiritual union that yokes us together as one in God. The greatest intimacy that is afforded us on this earth is in the arena of marriage, but we're not the same. And one of the greatest dangers that we're seeing today in America, as an example, is people trying to erase the sexual distinctions and make everything unisex and the same, even erasing the distinction of he and she. And the Bible says God made them male and female, and God made Eve as a complement to Adam. So oneness is a spiritual feature But the differences that we have are also a divine, imprint of God upon the marriage so that we complement one another properly.
Hmm. You know, Jimmy, go ahead.
I was just going to say, offer something here. The last chapter of our book deals with how these strengths affect what happens in the bedroom. It was by far the most complicated chapter for me to write without question. Because just to be honest, Joe, okay, stuff got weird. You know what I'm talking about? I'm trying to be reasonable. I'm trying to be fair and respectful. And just take my number one strength as an achiever, for example. Achievers love to get stuff done. Okay, you move that into the bedroom, and it quickly becomes apparent what my objectives are going to be. Well, it's really revelatory to begin to realize that your strengths can influence the way you approach your spouse and what happens in the bedroom. My wife has high relational strengths. She has high relator, and just like Ryan does. So I went to her when I was writing it and said, honey, how many times have you started what to you felt like a sexual invitation, and I missed the cue? And she said, oh, you have no idea. And my first response was, you're kidding me. How many times? What does it look like? Give me the clues. I need to know where the levers are. And so she said, here's how I started. I start with a conversation. Well, that was revelation to me. I didn't know that. And yet my cues look completely different to her because my wiring is different. I'm an action-oriented person, so my cues have much more of an action-oriented starting point. So it's just fascinating to see how these strengths really influence all kinds of things, including what happens in the bedroom.
So, Alan, both you and Jimmy had mentioned that the key to really kind of getting into the content of this book is both people being willing to take this assessment and kind of understand a little bit about themselves. But what happens when one spouse is more interested in growth or improving the relationship, but the other spouse is not so willing?
Well, if what I would say to that, Joe, very good question. In most cases, one spouse is more interested than the other. Almost all marriage counseling is initiated by women, and they are more interested in the state of their marriage than their husbands. But let me say this. When redemptive love, 1 Peter 2 talks about how Jesus loved us when we were still in our sins. 1 Peter 3 comes right out of 1 Peter 2, says, wives, you need to do the same thing to your husbands when they're not doing the right thing. Husbands, you should do the same things to their wives when they're not doing the right thing. So it's called redemptive love. It means the best person does the right thing first. And so rather than you say, well, my spouse is doing wrong, they're not sensitive, they're not working on marriage, great. But if one person is willing to work at it, that gives the marriage hope. So what I would suggest is this, the interested spouse, take the assessment, find out about yourself. The other thing, like I said, we have 2 hours of video. At the end of the book, we give you the key of how to look at these videos. You can go on there and pretty much figure out your spouse. You can, by just looking at the definitions of the strengths, you can pretty much figure out who your spouse is. Then begin to relate to them based on their strengths, celebrate their strengths. It opens a whole different world. Redemptive love means I'm coming into your world, and I'm loving you when you don't deserve it. You know, if you treat a person how they deserve, that's not grace. That's law. That's merit. Everybody hates that. But what people love is they love to be treated better than they deserve. The other thing people love is to be seen. And one of the things that Alan says that I love is what happens when you begin to understand the strengths, is you get seen for the first time. Like I was talking about that couple on television, this man, this pastor, that his wife, he looked at his wife and said, I always thought there was something wrong with her. He turned and looked at her and said, I am so sorry. I have never understood who you are. And for the very first time, they've been married for like 25 years. She got seen for the first time. So when you understand your own strengths and you begin to examine your spouse and see them for who they are and began to respect that, it has unbelievable potential to reinvigorate a marriage that is sick or maybe just stale.
Boy, what a great opportunity to kind of help your spouse be the best at whatever God has created them to be.
Yep, exactly. You're touching on one of the major themes in the book now, Joe, and it's the concept of affirmation. There's a big difference between praise and affirmation. Praise speaks specifically to what you do, and affirmation speaks specifically to who you are. They're not the same. And what we found is that affirmation is basically missing in the world today. It's missing in marriages. It's missing in relationships with kids. It's missing in workplaces. And the reason is because we don't know each other very well. But those five little words give you such insight into who the other person is. You can really speak true affirmation to your spouse. And when you do, it helps them feel seen in a way they have never had before.
You know, there's just so much really great information in this book. I know that there's also a website that people can go to find out more, not only about how to get the book, but more about the content that is in it. Can you tell us a little bit about that? We have about 2 minutes left.
StrengthsBasedMarriage.com. And they can go there, and also MarriageToday.com, either one. And they can go there. It will tell them about the book, how they can get the book. We would love for them to go on Amazon.com, local bookstore, wherever they want to go. But thank you guys for allowing us to be with you. But we very much believe in the book and believe that this is a marriage changer. It's a life-changing book for many couples.
Oh, my goodness. Jimmy Evans, Alan Kelsey, thank you for being able to just explain to us the benefits of understanding yourself, understanding your spouse, and how that can work together just with the grace of God to make your spouse, help make your spouse the best that they can be. I can attest to its wonder-working powers as well, and I'm just so grateful that you've put this together for us.
Well, it's been a pleasure being with you, Joe. Thanks for letting us be a part of it.
Anytime. Again, the book is Strengths-Based Marriage, Build a Stronger Relationship by Understanding Each Other's Gifts by co-authors Jimmy Evans and Alan Kelsey. And we'll have more information about their book on our website at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith. And again, if you want to get into a drawing for a free copy of their book, you can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. And we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Well, Bill Meyer joins us this afternoon, as he does every other Friday here on Connecting Faith. Bill hosts our morning show. You can hear that from 6 to 8 in the morning, Monday through Friday, and also at 11 a.m. on Saturday. Bill, of course, is also a child and family psychologist, so we get to talk about children and family every time he comes. So, Bill, one of the things that I hear a lot of my friends kind of complain about is this issue of screen time, phone time, TV time, and all the battles that ensue with their kids. How can parents get on top of that?
Well, it's a real problem, Joe. The average American kid is spending, 8 hours consumed in some kind of media per day, whether that's, a handheld device, whether that's a television, you name it. And our kids, their lives are becoming, I just think, way overconnected. And it's jeopardizing relationships. I think it's causing them to be less focused. You've seen a real increase in distractibility. And I frankly think they're losing the ability to connect with other human beings and have real conversations and make eye contact and use body language, because it's all via text now. So I think for moms and dads to really be the guardians of their child's media experience is important. And where that starts is setting some ground rules about when we will use devices. We're not going to use devices at the dinner table. And mom and dad, you need to follow that example as well. We're not going to have devices in the bedroom. After, 9 o'clock at night or whatever time, you decide as a family, the device goes to mom and dad. And it's funny, I was talking to somebody this morning, and you know how gun owners often have gun safes. I was thinking maybe we need device safes in our home where, you take the device away from Johnny and Susie, and it's locked up at night because a lot of kids are just so addicted, whether it's games or social media, they got to have it. And that is really setting a bad precedent. So I think starting off before you can get the device, before you buy that iPhone for your preteen or teenager, to say, here are the ground rules, because it's difficult to set rules after you've already allowed them to, you know, use their device in kind of an unlimited way. I think it's better to back up and set those rules ahead of time.
Well, we did that with giving our teenager his first cell phone because another parent had given us that advice. Otherwise, we wouldn't have known. But it has come in so handy to have that conversation. Remember when we talked about, and we actually had a contract that we had him sign. Remember when you said you would, and then we'd bring those things up. And then I've talked to other parents who didn't get that advice from their friends and so are trying to go backwards again. And it's this battle that is continuing, and it just breaks my heart because a little bit of planning would have saved them a lot of angst.
Well, it's so true, and I think one of the things a lot of parents don't realize, and we've actually explained this to our kids, is when it comes to gaming, unfortunately, and this is where some of my colleagues in the psychology world have, I think, done some things that I don't particularly think are ethical. The gaming manufacturers actually have psychologists who consult them on the best ways to keep a kid addicted to that device through trying to get to higher and higher levels and more points. And that's very troubling to me, that there's actually kind of a plan in place to try to get these, especially with the multiplayer games now, mm-hmm. where, you know, you're connected with somebody in all time zones around the world. And boy, these kids don't want to get off the device because their team might lose. Mm-hmm. And there's that social pressure as well. And so I think we need to sit down with our kids and say, you know, there are some of these game manufacturers that don't necessarily have your best interest in mind. And here's what they're trying to do to you. Now, whether or not our kids are going to buy into that or not, but I think it's good. It behooves us to share that information with our kids, that these gaming manufacturers are not necessarily their best buddies. They have an ulterior motive.
That's funny. There was one time where I said, okay, time to eat some dinner. And my 11-year-old was playing with a game on his handheld device, and he said, just let me push pause. And I said, you have 5 seconds, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then I took it, and I said, pause. It has been paused. It goes in the basket. Sit down for dinner. I mean, there's sometimes when you just have to be the parent. But it's hard because then, you know, the sadness comes, and you're right. There is something addictive about it. In fact, you talked about that this morning on your show, about this dopamine that is released when a text message comes, or maybe a Bing, or an opportunity for coins or extra points, that there's actually a chemical release that comes to our children the same way that it would to maybe a gambler or an alcoholic. Can you talk about that?
Or a drug addict, exactly. And it's basically, you're getting reinforced, and this is not just kids, by the way. This is mom and dad, and they're, and you can see this, Joe, in people who are separated from their device for a certain amount of time. You notice they start to shake when they're separated from their iPhone. There really is an addictive response, and we call it intermittent reinforcement. So you've got, let's say, from a lab perspective, you think of the rat in the cage, right? And when the rat presses the lever, they get a food pellet. Every time they press the lever, they get a food pellet. Well, if that happens, eventually the rat gets satiated and they eat enough food and they don't press the lever anymore. Well, if the rat presses the lever and only sometimes the food pellet comes out, maybe every third or fourth or fifth time that they press the lever, they get the food pellet. What do? They start pressing that lever because they're being reinforced in that way. And guess what? The same sort of thing happens to us when it comes to text notifications or some kind of, you know, social media ping that we're receiving, and we want to have more, mm-hmm. and we want to get more. And it does. It gives us that boost of endorphins, of dopamine in our brain that makes us feel good. Somebody liked my post. Oh, it's so great. So I think we need to really be careful. As adults, hopefully, we're able to manage our behavior, but our kids, their brains are not fully developed yet. And so they need our guidance and our input so that they don't get addicted themselves.
Well, one of the other studies that you had brought to my attention was that if we are going to spend time with our kids or allow them to be watching, say, television, that sometimes it's beneficial to sit and watch with them or play with them or communicate with them. Talk more about that.
A new study from Texas Tech, which I found was fascinating. A lot of kids, we've all seen the kids are vegging out in front of the TV. Their eyes are glazed over. What the researchers did is they looked at kids learning when they were watching a particular TV show, let's say with educational value, or see how they remember the plot or the characters. If their mom or dad were sitting there with them, they found that their heart rate went down, that their galvanic skin response changed, and they were more open to learning with mom or dad sitting by them. And, you know, we always talk about the fact that if your kid's going to watch a TV show that maybe, you know, needs some discussion, needs some parental input, if mom and dad are right there with them, they are going to be much more open to that input rather than, you know, you talk about the show afterwards and then they've been watching on their own. So it's pretty cool to see that if we use our TV in a positive way rather than just a babysitter, if we sit down with our kids and watch these shows and, of course, choose the right shows, if we watch them together, our kids are probably going to learn from what they're seeing a lot more so than if they're watching on their own.
It can have other benefits, too. In fact, one of the shows that I like to watch with my kids is this Kids Cook-Off, where young kids from 11 to 15 are cooking these elaborate meals that I couldn't even do myself. But it has inspired us to learn to cook a few things and to show them that kids can actually do these. And it's fun because it's one of those shows where people get kicked off. And of course, as someone who's highly competitive, that's always really fun for me. But it's fun for them, too, to kind of be part of that. Oh, who's going to get kicked off this time? And so you're right. Picking the right shows and not using it maybe as a babysitter, TV can have some benefits as well.
Exactly. I'm glad you're doing that. And I'm hoping my kids are going to watch one of those shows where they're building houses and they'll build a new place for me in the competition. So.
Well, we've only gotten to grilled cheese, eggs, and a couple of fruit dishes. So dinner is not stupendous at our house, but it's getting better. And it's a fun activity to do as well. And what I found also is that maybe I'd love to hear your opinion on this. As parents, we can't really just negate these electronics altogether. We can't just say you'll never have a phone. We can't eliminate these things from our lives. If we want our kids to be able to engage with society eventually, might it be better for us to help guide them through this process than to just say no until they leave the house and then they would just jump both feet in by themselves?
Yeah, they need to learn self-control, Joe, and that's so true. And it needs to come as they show more responsibility, they get more freedom. So that's the key. And I would say there's no reason that a younger elementary school child needs a phone, even though a lot of parents think that that's somehow a necessity today. It's really not. And I think until the preteen or teenage years. But yes, we need to teach our kids responsibility, how to use that device in a way that's appropriate, and also show self-control as far as when they get off it, that they're not spending all their time gaming or on social media. Because you're right, if we don't train them now, if they don't learn that self-control, once they get outside of our house and go off to college or the working world, all bets are off and they could be on that thing 24 hours a day.
Well, Bill, just some great advice today and always. We're so grateful that you join us on our show every other week. We look forward to our next installment 14 days from now. Thanks so much for joining us.
You bet, Joe.
Well, that was Bill Meyer. It's just so wonderful to hear some great parenting advice and relationship advice as well. You can listen to Bill again in the mornings from 6 to 8 here on Faith Radio. Well, we hope you have a wonderful weekend. And on Monday, it's Martin Luther King Day. And so as the holiday is honoring him, we will also do so. We have Brenda Salter McNeil joining us. She's written a book called The Road to Reconciliation, but she is just a wonderful pastor, teacher, professor, just a wonderful woman to give advice on how it is that we can kind of bridge this gap of understanding that we seem to have in our nation right now. What is that road to reconciliation? And Ryan, you have a show coming up tomorrow.
I do, yes. It tackles the question, which was posed in the New York Times, is Christianity in the Middle East dying? And Reverend Charles Morris from Haven actually went to Jordan and to Israel and to Iraq, met hundreds of Christians there, And his answer is really inspiring. That's coming up this weekend, 9 a.m. on Saturday morning.
9 a.m. here on My Faith Radio. You can listen to On the Road with Ryan. And have a great weekend. I hope you can get out and enjoy some of the beautiful Minnesota winter weather. It is supposed to be beautiful. The temperatures are going up. And if you're listening to us from far away, enjoy your weekend as well.